We'll call the Sussex County Council meeting to order for August 16th, 2011. First thing will be approval of the agenda. Mr. Baker?
Yes, we do have several suggested changes. First, we had a public hearing scheduled for 11 o'clock regarding Board of Adjustment fees. We made a mistake in the posting of the ordinance on the county website. The advertisement was correct, but what we're recommending after advisement from the county attorney is that we reschedule that public hearing because there was a clerical error on the ordinance that was posted on the county website. And even though that was not required that we post it there, and for the sake of caution, we're recommending that we reschedule that in September.
Okay.
Thank you.
And also, under old business, we have the wind turbine and windmill ordinance. There are some questions that are still unresolved on that, and we are not quite ready to bring that back to the council.
All right, get it right. Good.
Under executive session, we do not need job applicants, qualifications, personnel, or land acquisitions, so we would leave pending potential litigation.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Anything else?
No, that's it.
How about all those people that reading this paper don't read the website? How are they gonna know this has been canceled? I don't read the website. I read the.
It's going to be re-noticed in the newspaper.
Yeah, but I mean, okay. I just think when you change it, me, I'd probably be the one to end up being here because I just read the paper.
We'll entertain a motion to approve the agenda as amended.
So moved.
Second.
I have a motion and a second. Any questions on the motion? Take the vote, Mrs. Deaver.
Yes.
Mr. Cole?
Yes.
Mr. Phillips?
Yes.
Mr. Wilson?
Yes.
I vote yes. Motion carried. In our packets, we had the minutes from August 9th. Any corrections or concerns? Hearing none, they'll stand approved. We have correspondence, Mr. Moore.
Yes, Mr. President. We have several matters. The first is from the city of Rehoboth Beach. To Councilman George Cole. Dear George, I want to thank you for the very generous donation of $1,000, which we will use towards expenses arising from the performance of the Delaware State University Marching Band during our summer concert series at our bandstand. Your continued community support is greatly appreciated. Signed by Greg Faris. And then we have in council news, recognition from the Sussex County Association of Realtors to the Sussex County Community Development for their dedication and commitment to the housing for all Sussex Countyans and for promoting home ownership and addressing housing needs throughout our county, dated July 26,
2011. Anyone from council have anything correspondence?
Yes, Mr. President. We have one here from the Odyssey of the Mind, and I think Mr. Phillips and I both gave this is from Indian River. And they should just say thanks so much for the generous contribution and supporting this wonderful program. Mm-hmm.
Anyone else have anything? If not, we'll go to Mr. Baker.
The first item we have on the agenda is an introduction of Mr. Todd Lawson, the next county administrator. And Mr. Lawson started work last Wednesday, and I'm working together closely with Mr. Lawson and Will for the next several months, and we held a staff meeting Wednesday and introduced him to department heads, and we will be meeting with department heads individually, and I think the transition is going smooth at this early point, and I'd like to...
Well, it's only been a week, David. Come on. A marriage lasts a week.
Well, I'd like to introduce Mr. Lawson. Maybe like to make a few comments.
Just thank you for still here.
Good morning. How are y'all? Now, I just wanted to thank you for selecting me. It's an honor to be the next incoming county administrator. This is day six, working with Dave, and two things have been evident as we've toured the buildings and the complexes throughout the county and met with the staff. Everyone loves Dave Baker, and he has been a servant for this county for a number of years. And the second thing is, I've got some big shoes to fill. So I look forward to working with you, working with the county staff, and hopefully making this a smooth transition so you can enjoy retirement with Sandy and your family, and we can get to work together. So thank you very much. It's an honor. Look forward to it.
Welcome aboard.
Thank you, Todd.
Thanks.
Can we find out? The first thing you need is, why do they love Dave? Everybody can't love Dave. Is he giving out cash bonuses or something?
Sue won't let me.
I really love him.
Robin?
Yes.
Yeah.
I think you'd be hard pressed to find somebody who would have a bad thing to say.
Yes.
I can help you with that if you really want to know.
Take a lesson, Mr. Cole.
Yeah, we're going to drop. I've always wanted to be liked.
Well, you need
by
to run
Sam,
around,
by
you,
Sam, that is.
You need to run around with Mr. Baker for about a week, George. I recommend.
Next, Mr. Baker.
Next item is Planning and Zoning Commission recommendations, and Mr. Vince Robertson and Lawrence Lank are here today. The Planning and Zoning Commission has made some recommendations to the County Council for consideration regarding our codes.
Thank you, and good morning. Basically, this is just an update. Back in June, the Planning and Zoning Commission had a workshop where we were sort of, as the commission was tasked with going through the code and just seeing areas that maybe needed to be either corrected or brought up to date with current practices or things that were inconsistent with one another. It was a good opportunity to do that kind of with the way our caseload is right now. And we had that workshop and came up with a list that's outlined in my June 20 memo to council. The thought behind it was, first of all, just to look at areas that needed addressing from, a housekeeping perspective, not to get into really substantive changes. We realize that's the responsibility and the purview of council. There's a couple of things in that memo you'll see that get into that a little bit, one of them being parking issues, and I think there was another one with regard to signs. I'll give you an example of the type of things that we're looking at, and I'm not going to go through the entire memo, but one of them, the code talks about the commission meeting and making decisions on its second regular meeting of the commission. Well, as everybody knows, the commission meets 2 and 3 times a month. That's just not something that really applies anymore. There was a couple things in there that were just printer's errors where sections were located in the subdivision code when really they should be in the zoning code and vice versa. There were some areas that needed to be addressed to clarify our bonding requirements so that the code matches what we're requiring for bonding. That's with subdivisions and RPCs, for example. Street cross sections, for example, that's an area that's been in the code for probably 15 years and is no longer current with regard to engineering requirements for building a street and a subdivision. That one should be eliminated. One of Mr. Cole's favorites is the definition of substantial construction. There's one in the subdivision code, but not in the zoning code. It's been my opinion and legal staff's opinion that if a court looked at that, they would look at the other code for what that means, but we might as well just get it in both. So it's
no guarantee that they would do that, right?
There's no guarantee, but I think legally there's a good possibility that they would do that. But it's just something that we can just make one match the other, so consistency. Some of the more substantive ones a little bit were, like, for example, the commission thought about looking into the definition of home occupations, maybe making that a little more expansive. The commission right now is seeing quite a few conditional use applications that really are in the nature of just a shade over what we would call a home occupation. So that might be something, again, substantive down the road to look at. Golf courses is another one. The way the code is currently worded, it talks about a golf course really with just a pro shop and a snack bar, and as we all know, everywhere in the county, the golf courses have dining facilities and banquet facilities and things like that. I think everybody realizes that that's what a golf course or a country club is. We just need to get the code, updated to recognize that. One of the more substantive ones, which would be down the road that the commission looked at, was the requirements for the big box are 75,000 square foot limitations in the B1 and the C1 and CR1 districts. There's been some question about whether somebody could kind of get around that through subdividing a parcel. Even though the property is one common development, what happens if you carve that common development into, say, three lots? Do you still have to comply with the big box requirements? So that was something that, again, more substantive down the road, but one of the issues that the commission looked at, because it's had to deal with that issue from time to time. Same thing with parking requirements for, as I call them, the big box developments. There's been a question as to whether the additional 20% parking is required. What we end up with frequently is a lot of unused impervious space. We have a shared parking analysis that we can apply in the code already. The commission thought, well, maybe we could look at using something like that for the big box, so somebody would come in and say, okay, this is what I actually need based on parking standards versus just across the board saying 20% more for a big box development.
Well, you know, part of the problem, though, is some of the story, when I ride down Coastal Highway, a Walmart needs more parking. And you go to Kmart now, because maybe it's just...
too much.
It's gotten too much, and it's not so much... I guess it's the store. It's the brand name that is on that store that can determine the parking. So when we look at these, we're not looking at any, you know, we're looking at square footages and stuff like that. We're not going to say it's going to be a Walmart, so we might need more, or it might, you know, because it's this store, it may need less.
Right.
So I don't want to, you know, I don't want to get away from where if the one store sells and another, you know, group comes in, mm-hmm. then we're stuck. And thing with the share, here's one other thing on the shared parking. I know in the in one of the outlets they have the Applebee's, for instance, mm-hmm. and they go, oh, well, at night, you know, the restaurant is going to be used in the parking because the outlets don't need it. Well, in the summertime, the restaurant, they're all open at the same time. So we don't control that, and again, it looks like some of those parking lots aren't sufficient. So it's a juggling act, and I don't know if we want to be looking at trying to cut back on parking.
Well, and I said that's just one of the areas that the commission sort of looked at and told me to come to council
right.
with. And I think that's going to be one that if an ordinance is proposed by the commission, it's going to come after all these housekeeping ones that we'd okay. like to get addressed first. Another more housekeeping one was currently if you have a poultry house on less than 5 acres, that's a conditional use. Everyone basically agreed that's an area variance that should go to the Board of Adjustment. It just doesn't seem necessary for that to come to Planning and Zoning or County Council.
And we haven't had that type of application now for probably 10 to 15 years.
I can't remember.
Because the poultry growers, corporations want larger poultry houses so they won't fit on that side of the parcel.
We used to see them when somebody wanted to carve out just the section of their farm where the poultry houses were so they could get a mortgage from Farm Credit or somebody, and they would, you know, try to get it smaller for that reason and then come in with a variance. There's a couple just clerical errors about setback, a list of setbacks in one of the sections for the CR1 district, just so that if somebody looks at the code, if they look throughout the code, they're going to see the same information throughout. It's in one place, and then it was omitted from another place. One of them was in the environmentally sensitive development district overlay zone. There's a requirement that the Planning and Zoning Commission shall make a determination as to whether adequate information has been presented for the project to proceed. There's a question arose when we were having those, is that a preliminary step or is that part of the public hearing process? And the commission's approached it that's really just part of the public hearing process. You have to find that occurred for the thing to be approved. The commission just thought, well, let's clarify that just to make it so it doesn't sound like you have to have a pre-hearing meeting and then the hearing itself.
If it's determined that not enough information was presented at that public hearing, we've already got ours scheduled. So how do we ever currently we can't require them to go back and fix it. I mean, they don't have enough time.
Well, that would just be on subdivisions. So that would stay. That requirement's just for subdivisions in the environmentally sensitive development district.
So it does come in front of us. So you have time to
right,
request.
To do.
Okay.
And that would be part of the issue is whether there was an adequate record during the hearing.
So you don't make that determination when there's a public hearing on, like, say, an RPC or a change of zone?
Well, typically the way that's come up has been in the subdivision stage, because it would be the Planning and Zoning Commission that's determined that. Right. And I suppose even still, if it was going before council, part of the recommendation that would come from Planning and Zoning was that there was not an adequate record that was presented to satisfy that requirement. So that would come to council.
But we would not have the opportunity to, or you wouldn't say, we need more information and then delay the next public hearing so that we would have the better information, I guess. I don't know. So, I mean, the way it's set up now, it doesn't seem it helps if it's a public hearing process, if you follow me.
Yeah, I do. I think, well, that's one of the things that we'll
okay,
take.
Okay, well, yeah. Because that's
good to hear that feedback in terms of how we move forward on that.
Right.
And then there was two that weren't listed in here specifically. One is on the cluster development ordinance for AR subdivisions. When there was the original cluster ordinance that established that subdivision process, and then there were two amendments or two ordinances that were introduced, and they were introduced in one order, and they were adopted in the other order, or reverse order. And because of the way they were adopted, some of the subsections don't match up right. It's the commission's desire not to change any of the terms of the cluster subdivision ordinance, but just make it so that somebody reading the code, particularly a layperson, can track it through and understand exactly what needs to happen on that. And then one thing, keeps coming up at the commission, and it wasn't in your memo, there's a desire with sidewalks. That's something that's kind of been dealt with by the commission from time to time, and most often an applicant proposes sidewalks on one side of the street or two sides of the street or no sidewalks. It's been my advice, and I think certain members of the commission agree, if not all of them, that we need to establish guidelines so that somebody who comes in with a subdivision application knows, all right, this is what I need to do. And I'm not suggesting these are going to be the guidelines, but the types of things you could look at would be, whether it's in a developing district or not, whether there's a certain number of lots or not, whether it's standard lots or clustered lots, meaning smaller ones, that type of thing. Whether you could look at even whether the roads are swales or sidewalk, curb and gutter, type designs. There's any number of ways that we could do it, but again, that's just something, again, more down the road, though, that the commission would like to address.
In other words, basically come up with some minimal guidelines.
Right.
They can always exceed them.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay.
So the ordinance doesn't specifically require sidewalks.
Right.
But when the developer would come in and go through public hearing, and he would proffer that he was going to put in sidewalks, and he said one side or two side, he's getting one side or two side. That's typically the commission's motion in their stipulations. And then they may come back a year later when they come back to final and say, we've rethought this and we'd like to change from two side to one side or not have
two
any.
Sides.
Yes. And what we found, the ones with swales, we've had problems. Mm-hmm. Because the swales are designed with a degree of sort of drains and not, you end up with a tilted sidewalk, so that doesn't work very well. So we're going to work with engineering on that.
Yeah, and the conservation district probably too, because what happens is somebody proffers sidewalks early in the process, then they get to the conservation district on designing stormwater management, and the two don't work together. You get a sidewalk in a location where there's supposed to be a swale or whatever else. So, at this point, mainly the commission just directed me to come and sort of tell you this is what we've been doing, and the commission's been looking at. The commission's desire would be to address, as I said, the ones that are just corrections, I'll call them, bring them back to council so that you can look at them, and if council wants to, certainly then introduce it, and then it goes through the public hearing process. And as I said, the initial ones anyway, my hope is that there wouldn't be necessarily a lot of debate just because they're ones that just don't address substance at all. It just corrects something in the code or brings it up to date. So.
Yeah, well, it makes sense to me.
And what the commission would like to see if the council would allow the commission to take those items within the code that could be amended. So the commission prepared an ordinance submitted to council for review and consideration before introduction, and then you choose if you want to introduce it.
Okay.
Right now we're a little short on public hearing, so it would be some time they could spend during regular public hearing night.
Excellent.
And not interfere with public hearings that are scheduled.
Well, why don't you proceed with doing that?
Okay. Just to carry on just a little bit further, the same day, which is June 15th, Rick Burrow, myself, and staff met with the Board of Adjustment for the same purpose, because originally the director from council was both the commission and the board. And in that I spent the majority of the meeting explaining to the board what the commission had discussed, and most of those same issues were the issue that the board would have discussed. And then the board added raised questions about dog kennels, typically the number of dogs that are related to a commercial kennel. The feather flag discussion that's also in the memorandum from Vince. Yard sale issues, which are always being an issue and is not really covered in the code. Billboards, off-premise and on-premise signs. I'll put it this way, off-premise versus on-premise signs, because on some occasions, the on-premise signs have been converted to advertise off-premise, which isn't permitted. So we need to be more specific in the code to make sure that that's covered. Whether it's monopole versus wooden poles, most of them are going monopole now, but when they go monopole, at the cost, they want more signage. They want sometimes double stack, double side. And the percentage of wall cover, which we discussed the last time a couple years ago in the ordinance, where we came up with a percentage of wall. Some of the sign companies and some of the developers of the commercial properties are asking, can we take that percentage and put it on the building, any wall? And the ordinance says a wall. So if we look at a wall right now, the way it's written, and if you could have a large big box store with an empty wall facing the major highway, and you calculate that square footage and give it that percentage of construction, they could put a sign on it. The sign itself is big, but it doesn't look as big because it's on such a large wall. So they need to discuss that and come up with some recommendations for council.
I can't imagine, Lawrence, there's much opposition to when you have those big stores and they have big walls and they're putting signs on their stores. I think most of the controversy is these standalone signs.
Well, typically, the problem with on-premise signs at the 200 square foot, when we raised that from 150 to 200, it wasn't an issue. It's really not that much difference. Mm-hmm. And it gave them room because most of the projects are large. Then it gave them room to fit all the different
stores,
retailers in or whichever. And the other thing that was discussed, Mr. Mills gave some information that he had researched, and we discussed cell towers, the co-location on cell towers, which has been an issue in the public hearing process because the applicant has to show that he's made the attempt to co-locate on a tower within a certain distance. The billboard structure, again, the reference to penalties, the reference to placement surveys, typically in the manufactured home parks or for applications before the Board of Adjustment should be a survey. The difficulty that the public's had in hearing some of the commissioners, the councilmen, and the board for sitting back and not, you can't pick up the voices sometimes in the audience. And typically the tape does seem to pick it up, but it's really faint. And the viewing of the exhibits. Now, when you come to public hearing with council and the commission, typically the experience of the applicants has been to have an easel of their own, and we have two easels. So they have an easel facing the audience, an easel facing the board, council, or the commission. And the board, for some reason, they seem to only bring one because it's typically a small issue, small project. But the public can't see what they're presenting. So we can, you know, put in the ordinance that there's a need for, or we can provide easels, but there's a need for the public to be able to see, because a few of the people from the public would come in and review the file, but the majority get the information hearsay, and they come in not knowing really what you're applying for. If they could see the exhibit, they may go one way or the other, the opposite of what they would have been thinking when they walked in. So the board's on the same page, I think, with the commission. And what we would do there is that Vince would work with the commission, and Rick Burrow would work with the board. Or together, we may end up having to do it together, which might be a better way.
Can the first round all be done like in one easy, you know, like fell swoop where we come in and get it all done, all these little clerical and like you talked about, the little stuff?
I think we can, maybe not all of them together, but we can probably bundle certain ones together, okay. You know, just to get that done, the clerical ones, absolutely.
Yeah, some could be take a little bit more time, where others could be pretty readily prepared.
Okay. Yep, sounds well, good. Council comments? I think it's a great idea. Thank you for with both the commission and with the Board of Adjustment, Lawrence, to bring this stuff back to us. And if you'll proceed with working these things up, the housekeeping, that kind of thing, the clarification stuff. We'll deal with those first, and we'll maybe move forward.
Okay, and I'll report that back to the commission.
Ask them maybe how time frame they think that might, any kind of time frame you think that this could occur the first round?
I think probably by, I'll report back to the commission with an outline of the ones that I think we can get done the quickest, because they're more, you know, as I said, just cleaning up things. I would say to have something in draft to bring back to the council probably early October, I would think.
Oh, great.
Okay. Yeah.
That would be fair. We could do the same with the board, because most, if you notice, most of the issues were the same.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Most of what I submitted to the board, the commission was concerned about, the board's looking at it from the opposite side, because they're looking at variances and special use exceptions in the same realm.
So right. Okay.
I think it would be good. We'll get Rick and Vince and staff together. And
okay. Thank you. Thank you very much. Look forward to hearing back. Thank you.
Solve a lot of problems.
Administrator's report, Mr. Baker.
First item is Sussex County Library Advisory Board meeting. The Sussex County Library Advisory Board will be meeting Wednesday, August 17th at the West Complex between 10 a.m. and 12 noon. And we have attached a copy of the agenda. Foreclosure Prevention Seminar, Sussex County Community Development Housing Division, in collaboration with the Office of the State Bank Commissioner and Attorney General, will be holding a foreclosure prevention seminar on August 16th at Seaford at Pizza King from 3 to 7 p.m. This is a free seminar for homeowners that are having difficulty with mortgage payments. In addition to information about new federal and state programs and the foreclosure timeline in Delaware, representatives from HUD-approved counseling agencies, the Bank Commissioner's Office, the Attorney General's Office, and the County's Housing Department will be available for questions. Delaware State Police report for June. State Police handled 4,332 complaints during the month of June. There were 1,413 criminal arrests and 4,440 traffic arrests during the month. And attached is information received from the State Police. Thank you.
So we're having that foreclosure prevention today. Is that what you're saying, August 16th?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, they are.
All
yes.
Right. Okay. Mm-hmm. I won't make that one then.
Susan Webb.
Thank you. My first item today is to go over the 2011 actuary report for both the pension and the post-retirement benefit plan. And I'll just be presenting highlights from our actuary report. We have two plans that get an actuarially determined evaluation, our pension plan and our what we call the OPEB, as you hear us talk about it. It's the other post-retirement employee benefits, and it's our health insurance. We do this actuarial determination for two reasons. It tells us the condition of our plans, as well as gives us our annual required contribution or recommendation for the budget to fund our pension plan. Also, there are many disclosures in the actuary report that's required in our audited financial statements. If you look in our financial statements, there's about six pages that relate to pension information, which tells the reader the health of our plan and our promise to pay our obligations as far as our pensioners and our health benefits are concerned. And this report is just for our use only. And you do have the highlights that I'm going to be going over. As you can see highlighted, the number of active participants are 485 people. They tell us our annual required contribution every year in the terms of dollars and also a percentage. It's the percentage that we use for our budget, because when they give us the number, estimated number in February that we use for the budget, then they come back with an actual number, and then by the time we pay our pension contribution in December, we're paying it on wages. So it could be a little bit different from the numeric contribution that they give us. There's reasons why sometimes we have an increase or a decrease in what it was from prior years. In this case, for this year, it was an increase over last year's, and that's basically because of the assumed rate of return in the actuary report is 8%, which is standard for the industry. Our market value that we earned was 11.7. However, in 2008, we had a loss from the stock market, as everyone did. And what they do is they smooth that over 5 years to your annual contribution, so you're not taking a spike in 1 year to your annual contribution. And that's smoothed out. And will affect your contribution in the future. Another reason is this: in 2011, the plan experienced more retirements than anticipated. If you remember, we had two early retirement offers, and this is why we look at decisions like that very closely when we offer early retirement, because we could have savings in one area and maybe a shifting of costs in another. So where we're having a shifting of costs to our pension plan, but our savings to our annual budget, and we look to see at those net savings to make sure that we do have a net savings before we offer something like that, and we did. And cases, the other two cases and the third one that's coming up that we're working on now. The next page is a financial summary. It just shows 2010 compared to 2009 of the total assets at $49.9 million. Our benefit payments to pensioners were $2.3 million, and we had a market value of $11.7 million. These are some statistics on the benefit, the participants. 156 retired participants, 15 disabled, 73 vested, and active 485 for a total of 729. The next page shows the 10-year projected benefit payments, and that's what an actuary is all about, is projecting things in the future based on assumptions so you can fund your plan. And this shows the 10 years and the benefit payment to retirees, what's expected at 2011 at 2.5 all the way up to 2020. So you can see how this cost increases over time for our payments to our retirees, as well as the number of retirees always increasing. The next page, 13, is a schedule of the funding progress. This is one of the schedules I was speaking about that is a disclosure in the financial statement for the reader of our financial statements, and you can see particularly the funded ratio column of 88.7%. That's an important number that tells us how much in terms of percentage our pension is funded. We've been hovering since 2001 right about 100% in different years, and that's very positive for Sussex County. The next schedule, also a financial statement disclosure, is just an interesting comparison from 2000 and 2011 of our actual required contribution per the actuary totaling to $16.9 million and what we've actually contributed, $32 million. That difference of $15 million, and that's very positive for the county. In the years 2000 and 2008, where we contributed more, that's a combination of where the county has put in extra funds to the pension plan. Also, at that time period, we were paying pensioners from our general fund and not drawing off our pension plan, and that's considered a contribution to the actuary, where we weren't drawing off our plan and still paying pensioners. And then in 2009, we began to draw reimbursements from the pension plan because of budget constraints, frankly, and budgets got tight, and so we decided to draw at that time. The next schedule is interesting. It's the age and service distribution. It's based on statistics again. Across the top are the years of service. And as you can see, looking from 30 plus years, there's 25 people here that could retire anytime, which, you know, we can use as a management decision and a budget tool. Also, in the years of service 05 to 09, which represents years 2002 to 2006, we saw 157 participants, and then in the next years, 2007 to 2010, we saw that drop considerably, which sort of follows our budget, where we've reduced our number of employees down to 111. That's a 46 participants less, which kind of goes along with the last 2 years of our budget, where we've had less employees hired, and that's the same trend. The next schedule is shifting to the OPEB plan, the summary of results. That plan, the asset value as of January 1st, 2011, is $23.9 million, and it's funded basically, theoretically, the same way. They give us a percentage, and we apply that percentage when we make the contribution. And for the 2012 budget, that was 7.7%. Of course, since this is talking about health benefits, it carries a lot of different assumptions having to do with health care costs and the trends in those. They assume that there is a 9.5% increase in health premiums over the year because the OPEB is very sensitive to the health insurance costs, particularly prescription drug claims. The next schedule is the forecast of result for this plan, the five-year forecast with the annual contribution for June 12 at 1.4, going up to 1.8 million for the year 2016. This increases as well to our budget. The asset summary for that plan, as I mentioned before, is $23.9 million as of January 1st, what's held in the plan. Then the funding progress the same way. We can look at that funding ratio, and at this point in time, this plan is 72% funded, which is very positive for the county. And interestingly, this plan was just began in 2005. So in the 5 years that we've had funding for this plan, we've gone from 0 to 72% in those 5 years. This is very positive for our financial statements. And the projected payout on this plan, as you can see, increasing costs to our budget over the next 10 years, of course, like the pension plan. And I just wanted to mention at this point, as this is just an analysis of this, that we should take into consideration, as we've done in past years, in the future, moving forward, if we have surpluses with our year end, we need to consider perhaps, you know, putting some money into the plan, as we have done before, getting that funding percentage up as high as we can. It does save money in the future for contributions and increases the health of our pension plan. I know that's a lot of information to take in.
But basically, it's going to go up.
Well, if you have more retirees.
Right.
The good impact is you have less employees adding to the plan. We had the hiring freeze, so we're not adding as quickly as we were in the earlier years. But the OPEB, it's directly related to health care costs, and we know how that is. It's very expensive. So there are nice and healthy plans is basically the result of today's information.
Well, I only got one comment, Mr. President. Would be that, and I think I've said it before, we've got a great pension package with this county, and as you can see throughout the country, a lot of these pensions that packages at local level governments have gotten into trouble over the year, and we're not in trouble, but I still say we ought to have come up with a new kind of a plan for pensions for new hires as we go into the future. We've got a Cadillac right now, and maybe in the future we need to limit some of what we do, and I still say that would be good, you know, for the future. Or maybe a bigger contribution, but something. I just think that we shouldn't just sit back and say because we've been able to do this because the transfer taxes were so high, gave us the ability to do this. We may not see that in the next 10 years, and I would just suggest that we have somebody give us a consultant or somebody give us a proposal of what we could do with.
Could do a study on different.
But just, I think it's the time to do it.
Alternatives as to.
Let's not wait till we get in trouble.
Shapes and sizes of different plans other than, you know, the defined benefit. This is a traditional defined benefit.
Right.
We did.
Mr. Coles brought this up several times, and I don't recall the council ever objecting to his suggestion.
No.
Is there a reason why it's not been done?
Well, of course, when we have the hiring freeze, it's a little difficult. You know, we've talked about it a couple years, and we've only inched forward on hiring new employees very slowly, and where it would just not have an impact. And we did look at it with the 2012 budget, different things with the actuary, and did start the discussion preliminary about, you know, what options that we would have and the impact that it would for savings.
Is that something that Mr. you could proceed with doing some more research to bring that back to council at some point in the future?
Dave's got something.
I'm sorry, Mr. Baker.
Yes, we did, as Mrs. Webb mentioned, we did, our budget committee did discuss some possible options for new employees, such as maybe offering a different more 401k type option for new employees, and some of our younger employees might actually prefer something like that because they don't have to stay 8 years to receive any benefit.
Sure.
So we will be back with a with some options and present that to the council.
That'd be great, I think. Are you considering making that retroactive to last Tuesday evening at midnight?
Yep.
I just think it's we ought to be looking at it. So I just would appreciate if we could maybe make an effort to provide something in the near future with some suggestions.
I'm sure that Mrs. Webb, Mr. Baker,
when it's as well funded as we are, it does have a little bit different flavor on it because we still have our commitment to our old plan, if you know what I mean.
Well, I'm not saying change the old plan. I'm just saying
as
we start with new employees, as they come in, we say, here's our benefit package, and if they don't like it, they can go look for other jobs. But I'm not saying we give them some bare bones things, but I'm sure there's things we could do to modify what we do.
Yeah,
maybe some future council won't get in financial trouble with it.
We've discussed the possibility for new employees maybe offering a plan where the county would contribute a certain percent, the employee or match an employee's contribution.
There's a suggestion, right.
And then they can, that money would stay with the employee if the employee leaves after 5 years, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
So there is an advantage to it, especially the younger employees who may not anticipate being here for many years.
There was a time where we relied on that because we were paying what could be considered substandard wages, but an analysis was done last year that shows that we're actually paying very well, more than the state on average, and the private sector certainly is in trouble. So now's the time.
I think it's an excellent time to do it, and I don't know if it's something our consultants, is it something we want to drop on them and pay them to do it, or is it do we have the expertise and the time
well,
to do it in-house?
We can give them the options, but what they do is they take those numbers and they take it out, and with all their assumptions and tell us the savings in terms of that. But, and they do that.
Okay, if you would, Mr. Baker or Mr. Lawson, if you proceed with doing that, bring it back to us, we appreciate it.
Okay.
Next thing, Johnson's Corner Sanitary Sewer District. Mrs. Webb.
Okay. On September 25th, 2007, the county had entered into an MOU with three LLCs for the benefit of the county, and particularly the Johnson's Corner Sewer Project. Those parties were to share in a contribution towards the construction of the sanitary sewer piping and upgraded sewer treatment facilities in order to reduce the portion of the overall cost of construction for the newer sewer district for the current residents, which they did, and we did receive their contribution. It also stipulated an impact fee fund, which may be created, if desired, for the benefit of any low-income residents in the sewer district with the purpose to help subsidize part of the initial sewer connection fees. And as we know, at the time of the referendum, these sewer connection fees were anticipated to be $3,600. And as we know, the county was able to fund these connection fees through the financing of the project, as well as reducing the referendum rates 25%, which was a saving to the residents of the Johnson's Corner Sewer District. And we were able to do this because the construction contracts came in lower than the estimates due to the bidding climate at the time. And the project had received stimulus funding, or ARRA funding, from both the United States Department of Agriculture and SRF in the forms of grants and lower interest rates, which this project fell in perfect timing for the ARRA funding. So the Financing and Engineering Department are recommending that we amend the original MOU to be able to reallocate those developer contributions to this project to the connection fees and make the impact fee fund unnecessary, as we have no impact fees for this project. And this is a unique project because of receiving the ARRA funds, which basically at the time the way the ARRA is set up, it was strictly for construction costs with the idea of providing jobs in the economy, and this is strictly a reallocation of costs and does not change the project funding or the rates at all.
Now, as I read this, it says that we've collected, whereas MOU obligated Twin Cedars to contribute $589,000-plus.
Mm-hmm.
We've received that?
Mm-hmm. Okay. We've received from the original MOU, the contributions that were stipulated.
Okay, the next number, though, on that front page, Jerry, the $150,000, that's what we're waiving? We collected that also.
No, that is what, if we needed the impact fee fund, if we did,
right,
which we don't, that the developers were also going to help to contribute to helping with people afford the impact fee. But because of the way the project was financed, we're going to do it within the project.
So that money's not subtracted from the 589.
No.
It's over and above that, and
no.
So we're waiving just the $150,000.
Well, it's not that we're waiving it.
Or
we don't need to create the impact fee fund to begin with.
Well, they're not going to have to pay the $150,000.
Correct.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's kind of like okay. Somebody's waiving.
Which was in the original MOU, it's if necessary to create the impact fee fund.
Right.
Which.
Now, did other people contribute to the impact fee fund, or was it just?
No, it was. No. There is no impact fee fund. It was if it was necessary,
okay.
And we don't, because the connection fees are paid within the project.
So
it was funded in a way in which we could do that.
Okay. So that's the money we're talking about, $150,000.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I have a motion if there's not any other
Please.
Questions. Be it moved that the Sussex County Council amend the Memorandum of Understanding dated September 25th, 2007, with Twin Cedars LLC and Bay 20 LLC, and to be replaced by the First Amendment to the Memorandum of Understanding as presented today on August 16th, 2011.
So moved. I have a motion and a second. Any questions on a motion? I will take the vote. Mr. Deaver?
Yes.
Mr. Cole?
Yes.
Mr. Phillips?
Yes.
Mr. Wilson?
Yes.
I vote yes. Motion carried.
Thank you.
Next, discussion and possible introduction of proposed ordinance.
Okay. Now I'm going to be discussing current bond refunding opportunities for the county, as well as a possible introduction of an ordinance for this purpose. And today we have a representative from Public Advisory Consultants that's going to speak to us. Susan Ostaszewski is here. Welcome. There are substantial savings that we can see from our sewer debt by doing a bond refunding, possibly an estimated of $7 million. And you received the recommendation in your packet from Public Advisory Consultants on how this process works. I do have a ordinance to hand down. This has been a work in progress. We're trying to move fairly quickly and to take advantage of the market situation right now with the bond attorneys and with our financial advisors.
It might be something different.
We are not authorizing new debt, or I'm not recommending to authorize new debt. However, we are looking to refinance debt that's always been issued and getting your permission to move forward on this project. The ordinance is to refund up to $91 million of general obligation debt that's outstanding for the county. And we'll be working on how we will be using the savings for each of these bond issues and each of these individual sewer districts. I'll be working with the engineering department and keep you posted on that. You had a schedule attached is what we anticipate the individual bond issues to refund. And we can decide this right up to the time of sale based upon the rate and the projected savings. We look at what is saving over 3%, and we start from there and we schedule it all out, and you can see from that schedule the current rate that we were getting and how we can get those savings. And Susan is going to talk to us today about why we should do this, our bond rating, and how it affects the sale and the timing of the issue.
Thank you. The reason to do this right now is that rates are very, very low. We haven't seen rates like this, really this low, in a long time. And so you have a chance to save some real money here. We would not be issuing any debt. All the debt that's being issued is just to is basically just to replace your current debt that's outstanding. A lot of rural development loans, and a couple of there's general obligation bond series and that sort of thing. Over the last, I would say, 6 months or so, interest rates have dropped substantially. Now, I can't guarantee that a month from now they're not going to go back up, but we would never proceed with a sale unless there was savings. And we would never proceed with any particular series unless there was savings for that series. So that's why I think right now is a good time to go forward. The process is basically that we would do a public sale, which you would talk to rating agencies. You would put together an offering document, and then we would go out to the market, to the public market, and you would basically receive bids for your bonds. The rating agencies, you're currently rated AA1 from Moody's, and a AA from Standard & Poor's. These are very high ratings, which will contribute to your ability to sell bonds well. I was looking at some interest rates. The difference right now between, say, a AA credit and a single A credit is about 0.5% to 0.7%. In the course of, say, $1 million over 1 year, this is $5,000 difference. But, of course, if we're issuing a lot more debt for a lot more period of time, $70 million issue, you're going to be saving $350,000 just because you have this higher bond rating. So anyway, that's why another reason why you're in such a good position is the market is really looking for quality issuers, and you guys are a quality issuer. Moving forward, we would be looking at probably doing a sale mid to late September. If the ordinance would go into effect, I believe September 13th, we would then put an offering document hopefully out as soon as possible after that. And normally the offering documents need to be out for approximately a week. So our earliest date would most likely be September 20th. It could get pushed back a little bit depending on where things looked. But I think we're looking basically to September 20th or thereabout sale. Closing, where you would receive your bond proceeds, would be approximately 2 weeks later, which is the beginning of October.
And this, Susan, if I understand this correctly, what this does basically is it allows us to refinance this obligation, the sewer obligation. And this, at the end of the day, benefits those users of those sewer districts because they'll have a less payment to make.
Does it reduce their payments?
That's right, and that's something that we would determine when we analyze the savings. Uh-huh. Yes, it's made up of different issues, which is made up of different sewer districts.
Right.
And it will all be calculated separately as to which district has what amount of savings, and we'll determine, the best use of these savings into that sewer district as we move forward. We wanted to just keep some momentum because of the market and kind of work, at the same time to determine some of these things that we will nail down.
And the cost of doing all this?
There's a cost of issuance, but that's why your savings have to be big enough.
Something happens the end of September and the market is, going crazy.
We wouldn't
right.
do it.
There's a cost. What would that cost be? At that point, to the county?
There's not a lot of cost that would be done unless the bond actually sells. And I can't speak for your bond counsel, but as far as for financial advisory services, rating agency fees, anything like this, if you don't sell your bonds, you don't get charged.
But we have not doing all that work for nothing.
Of course, the bond attorney had drafted the ordinance, and at this point, that's where we're at. We don't have a lot of yet time spent putting this all together because we wanted to get your permission to move forward as well as let you know what's going on for the next month.
You mentioned maybe a $75,000 savings just because of our improved rating. What's the current interest rate versus what you could potentially get if it was sold today?
Well, today if we were selling bonds, and it's a little bit, you sell bonds when you do public issue so you would get one interest rate for your first year, a second interest rate for your second year. But overall, I think you'd be looking at about maybe a 350 to a 375 interest rate. And that's based on the fact that it's a fairly long, some of these bonds are going to be long maturities because you have outstanding debt out, in some cases 38, 40 years. So you're looking at a fairly long long amortization. If it was shorter, it would obviously be less. But I think you're still talking about probably at least, if you're looking at a 450 right now is what you're paying, and you would reduce it down to maybe a 350. I think so that's where, I mean, we're talking here, I think, $7 or $8 million with the current market.
That's the savings of $7
that's,
million.
That's your debt service savings
right
overall.
Now.
You said 75,000. Did you mean
that was just for our improved.
That was for the difference in your bond ratings.
Right.
But overall, you know, because of the lower cost of your interest rates right now, you're going to be saving $7 to $8 million, assuming, of course, that over the course of time. We can structure your debt service savings several ways. In some cases, you can save the money, what we call upfront savings, where you would be paying less debt service mostly in the first 1 to 5 years, and then you would have similar debt service to what you're paying right now thereafter. There's also what we would consider equal annual savings, where you would, instead of having, where you would basically reduce your payments over the life of the debt. So there's a couple of different ways of structuring it, and we would certainly work, you know, with your staff to determine which is best for which particular, you know, series.
Any more questions for council?
How much total debt we owe?
Total debt we owe $190 million in sewer debt at June 30.
Well, how much of
This is up to $91 million is that we're looking at, and that number could be 88. It could be. We just wanted to get the max amount so we don't have to come back with another ordinance.
Sure.
No thought here. We're going to save money here. How come we don't apply this money to our debt? Why can't we put this on our credit card?
Speak into your mic.
Go ahead.
Mr. President.
Mr. Baker.
That is something that has not really been determined yet, because there are some, for instance, West Rehoboth Sewer District, there are some projects possibly that some of the savings could be used for instead of going out and borrowing money for a project in the near future. Mm-hmm. We could use these savings, take them up front for that project instead of taking savings over the next 20, 30 years.
Well, that would work if you're not going to give it back to the people that's paying it in. Mm-hmm. If you're going to be able to save it and bank it and have it for another project. But if it's gone, it's gone.
Right.
Is this the way I understand, or am I understanding?
Well, we haven't really. Basically, we wanted to look at each of these individually. There's various projects that are here. We wanted to look at them each individually. We haven't completed that yet, because we could take savings up front for individual projects, or we could stretch it out over the life of the bond, and then that would result in savings for the residents of that particular sewer district. We just haven't got that far yet, and it's okay. But this is very substantial savings.
I think what you're trying to do now is to let us move this forward so we can do this while the interest rates are where they are, hopefully.
Yeah.
Yes.
And then when we get that part done, then you can decide how you want to allocate the savings. Is that a fair statement?
That's
yes.
Correct.
Where there's, yeah, they'll suggest to us.
In the past, when we refinance, typically we've used a rule of thumb about it with a 2% savings. And if you look at the schedule on the back of Sue's letter, you know, the savings are like 8.9% on average, and they run anywhere from 1% up to almost 12%, you know.
Sure.
I mean, it's really substantial savings.
Okay. Any more questions, this young lady? Thank you very much. We appreciate that. And Sue, I have
the title of the ordinance. If someone will introduce it, I'll read it.
Please.
An ordinance authorizing the issuance of up to $91 million of general obligation or wastewater refunding bonds of Sussex County for the purpose of refunding prior debt of the county, which will result in debt service savings, and authorizing all necessary action in connection therewith.
Mr. President, I believe there was a word misread. It was revenue bonds instead of refunding bonds.
No, I specifically, it's... It, this is one of the, another one of the options that we don't know, which will be advantageous, especially for West Rehoboth. Wastewater revenue bonds is an option that we may have. We don't want to limit our options at this time.
So on the second line of the ordinance that you just handed out, where it says wastewater revenue bonds, that should be refunding bonds?
No, it should be revenue bonds.
Okay, I believe you read that
you read
one.
Refund.
Oh, I'm sorry. I saw refunding on the third line. I'll read it again.
Please.
Okay.
Please.
An ordinance authorizing the issuance of up to $91 million of general obligation or wastewater revenue bonds of Sussex County for the purpose of refunding prior debt of the county, which will result in debt service savings, and authorizing all necessary action in connection therewith.
I'll introduce it.
Caplan Phillips introduces it. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
There is a read-aloud program at a lot of the local schools.
I apologize. I get tongue-twisted sometime.
Steve Hudson. Sussex County EOC Airport Solar Energy Installation Project, substantial completion.